Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, quick thank you before we get started to our sponsor of this episode, Austin Jarrow, Duluth's original running store. That's the place to get your running shoes. Great advice from all the people that work up there. Check out their website, austin-jarrow.com. They are also on Facebook and Instagram. Drive on up to their location on Central Entrance, just on the other side of where the Home Depot is, but on the other side of the road. Or give them a call, 218-722-1185. Thanks so much to Austin Jarrow. All right. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, Tony. I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. It's good to be back on the podcast. It has been a beautiful fall. Weather right now has just been stunning. A little bit of rain, which was needed, but not enough to kind of ruin things necessarily. A little chilly for a little while, but mostly It's been pretty warm, and it's been great.
It's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, should we hop right in? We got a lot of race results. Well,
and yeah, exactly. It's also like the racing time of the year, which was really nice that we've had good weather for these races.
So let's
talk about some of these results, because maybe some fast times are indicative of these beautiful temps. Who knows?
Yeah, we have some fast times coming in. The first race result I want to highlight, this is actually from a listener submission, Joe Gerard, local multi-sport athlete out of Duluth. Sent in results from the Father Ben 5K. This is up at Stella Murray Academy. I believe this was a first-year event. I guess I don't know for sure, but local speedster John Curley took the win with a 18:26 overall, and then fifth place overall, first place for female, Kelly Leal with a 23:21. And we had somewhere in the neighborhood of 77 finishers total, so if you're looking for a 5K for a good cause, check that out. Results coming in from the Kara Goucher 5K. This was at the Swain.
Yeah. So, that was a cool event.
Yeah. You were there.
I was there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe you could comment a little bit, because we mentioned the citizen race.
Correct.
What was that like?
Oh, it was so cool to watch adults doing cross country on the same course where after the kids had already ran.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want a real challenging race, do that race next year, people. It's a long grind of hill, and you kind of do it twice, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a cool event. But then it's sort of like running at Leicester Park. Uh-huh. If you've got anything left, you get a little nice long downhill to the finish.
Okay.
If you've got anything left, because it is a long grind. But, really cool event, and cool to see Kendall run so fast.
Yeah, Kendall Hill took the win, 17:56, strong margin, about 90 seconds for the win there. And I believe Amber Gursky took the win on the female side with a 23:31, and we had a 24 people in the Kara Goucher 5K. Of course, there's heaps of results from the actual high school and middle school races, but for the citizen, there's that. This is in no particular order. We have so many results. I'm just going to like rapid fire from all the 1,000 tabs that I have up. So let's start with the results actually from today, the Superior Nightmare, part of Grandma's Marathon suite of races. The winner there, Carter Vork, 16:59. First place female, Colin Suflo, 19:57, and then the first place non-binary Shay Callaghan with a 34:17. So over 600 finishers for the Superior Nightmare.
Nice.
There,
that's really good.
Not too bad. Let's see, we have results from the Twilight Trot 5K in Duluth, Minnesota. This was back in September 26th. Evan Walpole took the win there, 20:36. Aurora Koth took the win on the female side, 22:31, 25 finishers in the Twilight Trot. Cloquet River Run, annual classic. In the 5K, Sam Jacobson took the win, 21:16. Sophie Overturf, 25 years old, took the win on the female side, 24:51. In the 1 mile, we had Archer Walters take the win, 6:41. Iris Walters, maybe siblings there, 7:02 took the win. Walters family crushing it. The Grand Traverse, actually on the same day, I believe, in Duluth, Minnesota, a bunch of different results there. In fact, it's too many to discuss. There's four different race distances. So race results are on DuluthTiming.com if you want to look. Let's jump into the Duluth Women's 10-mile. Winner there, Amanda Blair from Grand Rapids. Smoking fast time, 59:28. And yeah, a lot of finishers in that race. Pretty cool to see. I was down there for that. New race this year, the Break the Bank 50-mile.
Yeah.
Maybe let's just go for the solo finishers because there's a couple different relay categories as well. Course records were set, of course, with the first year event. That course record is 6:50:59. First place overall and first place for female. Rachel Ragona, speedy time. Just a few seconds after Rachel, first place male, is Jeff Miller, ultra marathon extraordinaire out of Silver Bay, Minnesota, 6:51:12. And we had 43 finishers in that solo 50-mile category. Mm-hmm. And, of course, a couple relays as well. All right, got to shout out my team here, the Hoops Running Club.
Nice.
Took first place for the five-person relay. So. Sounded like a pretty cool event. And, again, just like optimal weather conditions for that.
Yeah, exactly. That looked cool.
We also have results coming in from the Wild Duluth races. Again, there's just like, there's a lot of, results for all the events. So just to be fair to Grand Traverse, there's four races there, four races Wild Duluth. If you want to see results, you can just go on to, DuluthTiming.com, but, hundreds and hundreds of finishers all around. Let's highlight maybe just one winner from one race, and that is Chelsea Youngberg took the win with a dominant course record performance, 4 hours, 33 minutes, and 11 seconds. And we actually have an interview from Chelsea as well. All right, we are here with former Duluth Rundown interview subject and new Wild Duluth 50K course record holder, Chelsea Youngberg. Chelsea, how are you doing?
I'm good. I feel a lot better than after a road marathon.
Great, great news. That's a great sign. So how did the race go today? You had a record day today.
Yeah, it went pretty well. I didn't really know what to expect going out, and this is the farthest I've ever ran, but as far as like fueling, I felt like it went pretty well. I just tried to do like high carb energy drinks the whole way, and I kind of went out fast because it was like the first third is probably quicker, like ski trail, and then the second section just kind of slows you down and you can only do go so fast with the technicality of the trail. I probably felt the worst in the middle around like Keene Creek, and then I was able to pick it up again and kind of rally to the finish. So overall, I'm really happy with the day, and yeah, I don't know. That's a pretty good debut, so I don't know what else I could have done differently for it to go better.
Absolutely, and the new course record. Now you shaved off what, over 30 minutes on the time? Is that right?
Yes, I think I was 4:33, so I think Nick said 34 minutes was shaved off. So yeah,
amazing. So what would you attribute to such a great debut ultramarathon performance?
I think first off, being like skiing in my background, I feel like I'm pretty strong. And there's like a lot of like up and down in trail running, especially the SHT. It's very technical, so just like stabilizing muscles, I feel like I'm pretty strong from skiing. And then the NMTC fall series, dang, that is, those races are hard. So I am very new to those. I did them for the first time this fall, and they definitely got me in shape and ready for this.
Well, you and me both. It was really fun duking it out with y'all fall series at the NMTC, yeah. And I thought maybe that I could hang with you, but yeah, you smoked me. Congratulations,
Chelsea. There's always tomorrow.
There's always tomorrow. Well, congratulations. Nice work.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, that was an impressive performance and really cool interview, post-race interview from Chelsea. Yeah, and good to hear that she sounded like she probably could have gone another 10-mile cool-down jog or something and would have been just fine.
She probably did.
Yeah, she probably did. No, it was cool to watch, too, because I was there crewing and for people and for a person, and it was cool to see her just crush.
Yeah, and good to hear, like I mentioned in the interview, like good sign that she maybe feels better than after a road marathon, because I want to see her go for the Voyager record.
Yeah, totally.
Which
yeah.
is, I think, really achievable.
Absolutely.
Based on that.
Because
so,
it's, I would say, probably more runnable than, you know, longer distance, obviously, but you would probably run more, you would run fast more
yeah.
on the Voyager course versus the Wild Duluth course.
And I believe the record is just under 8 hours, so I think it's okay. pretty attainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
For someone like Chelsea, yeah, mm-hmm. he's putting up these crazy times. So we also got an interview with the race directors, Andy and Kim. So that's a fun perspective to hear. So let's jump into that one as well.
Absolutely.
All right, we are here with the Duluth Rundowns. A couple past interview subjects, Kim and Andy Holak. Kim and Andy, what's going on down here at Bayfront right now?
Wild Duluth races, baby.
Just finishing up here. We've got, I don't know, maybe 30 runners in from the 50K, and it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, best colors ever down here. Just awesome. Ben Cogger crushed it again. 4 hours, 4 minutes. 3 minutes off his course record last year. So great day. Chelsea Youngberg
also crushed it.
Yes. So great day for the runners.
Most likely a course record for the women, I'm guessing.
We think it might be, but my mobile Ultra sign-up is not optimized for a mobile device.
Oh, we think it's over a 30-minute course record for women.
Really?
I believe that.
Ooh, I haven't checked my... Yeah, that's awesome. I should know that as a race director what course record is.
I don't. I believe that.
For the listeners out there, I mean, maybe they don't see behind the scenes. What goes into putting on a big race 2 days in a row like this?
Not a lot of sleep.
Not a lot of sleep. I agree with that. But the fun part is on Sunday, we're so tired that it's like we're drunk. So we're just having fun. It's a great day. No alcohol involved, but a lot of sleep deprivation. So try it sometime.
High off life, huh?
That's right. High on life, baby.
And it's just a super fun energy on Sunday. It's just a different energy with the half marathoners and the 10K. I remember the first year we did this thinking, how are we going to do the second day? And it was like, whoop, we just got energized by that whole... All those runners. It's just a different...
Yeah. Super fun. We feed on the energy from the runners. It's awesome.
Okay, so we're talking maybe a little bit about the Wild Man, Wild Woman Challenge. Releasing that challenge, what does that mean to you? What's that all about?
Yeah, we love it. We actually, it's like one of my favorite things because we give every runner, regardless of their front, middle, or back of the pack, they get... adulation that a winner gets at the end of the day. We announce that we've got a wild person, everybody cheers, and it's super fun. That again, that's what makes the day super fun. So the wild people get an engraved hatchet, which is awesome. They do one race on Saturday, an ultra marathon, and another race on Sunday, and it's just a super fun time.
And Andy loses his voice because he is the one that does the ceremony.
Yeah.
Each person.
You have to kneel in the gravel, and I knight you with a hatchet. And I should mention that the interviewer is also
Mike Ward.
the only person in history that has won the 100K, came
and
back the next
the
day and won the 10K. So thank you, Mike Ward. I know you brought that up just so we would say that.
No, but thank you anyways. Well, I'm really excited personally to be back and get knighted tomorrow. And thank you so much for all the work you do.
I can't wait to knight you.
It's been a blast.
All right.
Okay, we also have results coming in from the Pumpkin Run 5K out in Cloquet, part of the Fond du Lac Community College. First place there, Scott Baling took the win with 15 minutes and 58 seconds, speedy fast time. And then Rochelle Wirth on the female side, 21 minutes and 18 seconds. And we had 164 finishers for the Pumpkin Run this year.
Nice, really popular event out there.
Absolutely. Last but not least, we have quite a few results coming in from the NMTC Fall Trail Run Series. I'll just run down the list real quick. Rock Hill, Calvin Boone took the win, 20 minutes, 29 seconds. First place female, Chelsea Youngberg. At Pine Valley, Calvin Boone took the win, 19 minutes flat. Female winner, Chelsea Youngberg, 21:56. At Rolling Stone, we had Ben Cogger back on top, 22 minutes and 7 seconds. 25:01 was the time for the female winner, Chelsea Youngberg. And then the Bull Run, Ben Cogger again took the win there, 41 minutes and 4 seconds. Chelsea Youngberg, fourth overall, came in at 46 minutes, 35 seconds. So just like she said, NMTC definitely paying dividends when it comes to the trail ultra marathon stuff. And just quick rundown, we have one series race left, and then it's the potluck and the finale. As we record this, that's tomorrow at Hawk Ridge. So we are setting up for a pretty competitive series standings, at least on the male side. On the female side, Chelsea Youngberg has a stranglehold with a perfect score of 1,200 so far. She's won every single race.
Yeah.
Brooke Wilson is a bit behind, but Brooke's been right up there. She has 1,165 points. On the guy side, Ben Cogger looking pretty good. He's won almost all of them. Second and third place just a couple in there, 1,195. And then Landon Harwood is chasing him, 1,177. So I think to knock down Ben or Chelsea, they would just have to not show up. So that type of thing. Not looking good for anyone else coming up behind him. And then on the non-binary results, Deli Heel is firmly in the lead with 1,046 points. So, tomorrow should be a fun time. I'm looking forward. Hopefully, if I can race okay, I'm going for the Voyager 2026 entry at the prize table. So
nice.
We'll see. And we also have a couple interviews, actually, from the NMTC finale race at Hawk Ridge. So let's hop into a couple live looks at the potluck. Okay, we are here with former Duluth Rundown interview subject Ben Cogger and first place in the men's division for the 2025 NMTC Fall Trail Race Series. Ben, how did the series go for you this year?
It was good. It was challenging, but it was good.
Do you have a favorite race, maybe from this year or in general, at the Fall Series?
It's got to be between Zaps and the Bull Run. Yeah, those are my two favorites.
So the longer technical races seem to suit you, huh?
Very much, yeah.
And you had a bit of competition. I mean, some years I know you get the perfect score, win all of them. What was the competition like this year for you?
Generally speaking, people half my age and fresh out of college.
And then here you are, in the Masters category, still crushing.
I'm doing the best I can, yep.
Sweet. And also, I know that you ran Wild Duluth last weekend. Do you want to briefly recap, how did that race go for you?
Sure, it went pretty well. There were two guys and myself that kind of went off the front, and a guy wearing tall stack super shoes vanished from sight probably about 2 miles in. And then I never saw him again. And I, up until about halfway through the race, I thought I was pretty solidly in second place until some of the incoming 100K runners started making comments like, there he is, and that's the leader. And I thought, oh, what happened to the other guy? And at the finish, I figured out that at some point he'd taken a wrong turn, maybe. So, but it was a nice day. Ran smart. Never had any major issues, so that was fun.
Congrats on another win at that, and another just smoking fast time. So what's next for you this winter, and maybe looking to running next season?
Skiing, hopefully, this winter. We get some snow, and yeah, we'll just see what next year brings.
Nice. So we interviewed Jacob Wortman recently. I know that you've run with him over the years a lot.
champion of both Voyager and Superior 100 miler. When are you going to do that 100 mile distance, Ben?
Never.
All right, fair enough. Well, hey, thanks for taking some time. Congrats again on another great fall season.
Thank you very much.
All right, we are here with former Duluth Rundown interview subject, Jara Wauman. Legend, Jara Wauman. Big-time supporter. You do so much for the NMTC. Another one's in the books. How did the season go, Jaro?
Well, I know we had good weather for almost every race and good turnouts, and everyone seems very happy.
If you could give our listeners maybe just a brief rundown, like the history of the NMTC Spring and Fall Trail Race Series, and just what does this mean to you?
Well, so in 81, we had our first races, which included the Hartley 10K. And then in 82, we added a sling of races around the city on different trail courses. And it was a mixture of single races, and we also had relay races, which we did for several years, but they were too hard to put on. So those were converted into single races. And then pretty much every year we've been doing it since. We had some problems with COVID, of course. But otherwise, you know, we just keep trudging on.
What do you foresee as the future of NMTC as an organization and the Spring and Fall Trail Race Series? What's in store for us local Duluth runners here?
Well, we have the same races pretty much every spring and fall, with every now and then a race will kind of die off. Maybe the course will disappear, or there'll be some construction. But we have a lot of longevity. A lot of races have been around 30, 40 years. It's just a matter of bringing in new people, because some of us have been doing this for 40, 50 years. And come forward, whoever you are.
Yeah, actually, May gave a shout out for board members. What's your pitch? Why would maybe one of our listeners want to consider applying?
Well, why would they want to do that? You have to have a real belief in what we're doing, you know, running in the woods, exploring the trails, giving back to the community. I just hope that there are some, you know, people out there that are into that.
Jaro just brings sunshine to everyone.
Bringing sunshine to everyone.
If you want to get sunshine. On a personal note, Jaro, I saw you with another 5K finish at the Superior Nightmare 5K. How has your running season gone this year, and what's next for you?
That was my last race that I know of this year, and there were a lot of races I was going to do leading up to that race that just didn't happen because I just wasn't up for it, but I kind of made myself do it, and I'm glad I did because it went really well. It's a really well-run race. It's flat. It's fast. The weather was great. I ran a minute faster than I thought I would. And I suppose my next race is probably the Fennis in March.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for your time, Jaro. Thanks for all you do. And, we'll see you around.
Yep, thank you.
All right, we have results from the Whistle Stop Marathon in Ashland, Wisconsin. The winner in the marathon, Eric Glaubke, 2:40. And 1 second, smoking fast time, and really fast time as well on the ladies' side. The first female, fourth overall, was Ariella Degner with a 2:56.13. And then that is for the full marathon. We have also results from the half marathon. Chris Baranian from Minneapolis took the win there, 1:12.16. Four people under 1:20, so pretty fast time there. And then Ann Meyer from Minneapolis took the win on the female side, 1:29.26. And then we also have results from the whistle stop on the 10K, Andrew Deming from Solon Springs, 42:43. Second place overall, first place female, Alyssa Cavajets, 42:54. So pretty tight results coming in on the 10K. Last race during the Whistle Stop Marathon weekend is the 5K race. Tanner Hovland took the win there, 20 minutes and 44 seconds. Tanner's out of Ashland. And then the first place finisher on the female side was Catherine Myers from Washburn, 11 years old, 24:20, nice. 15th overall. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a fun local race. Just so many awesome races going on this this fall. And yeah, if we missed any, definitely send us an email, theduluthrundown@gmail.com. We can get that back in. So that concludes. Yeah, that concludes the lengthy list of race results from late September and October here, and really winding down on the upcoming races. We have the Gobble Gallop 5K coming up on Thanksgiving Day, so that's in about a month. Next segment, Tony, how are the trails looking around your parts? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, trails are perfect, I think, right now. Even that little rain that we have had has actually almost been more beneficial, I think, if anything. Here's one downside, though. I was in Hartley a little bit today. Mm. The leaves that are down are a little wet and some slippery in spots, but I feel like the exposed dirt is actually nice and tacky right now. I ran in road shoes and was 100% fine today. But if you're really running, and I wasn't running hard, but if you are running hard, maybe watch some of the slippery leaves
a
little bit. But other than that, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, being on the course for the Wild Duluth races last weekend, you know, just, 7 days ago, I guess, it was really optimal conditions.
Yeah. Nice.
I feel like a lot more leaves have fallen down just in a week, you know, with some freezing temperatures and things, but it was really nice last weekend. We had a bit of rain maybe the week before, like really light, but on race day for both days, like the boardwalks were just bone dry.
Yeah, good.
And like I didn't even have mud on me. So
yep,
really nice conditions out there for some later fall running. Let's move right along to Coach's Corner this month. Tony, what do you want to talk about?
So real quick, just because it's Grandma's 50th anniversary, a lot of people are signed up for the marathon. My quick advice to everybody who are doing that is set your goals and start training now. Start training appropriately. Just if you're relatively new to it, just stay consistent in your training. You don't worry about doing anything too crazy right now, but just get that frequency established.
Yeah.
And then you'll get longer runs later on. You'll get speedier runs later on, but just kind of get the rhythm going. And, particularly if you're someone who's relatively new to this.
Yeah. That's a great advice, I think, to get the habits in now. Maybe you could kind of talk to someone like me. I mean, here's a little bit of my story. You know, last year, after Wild Duluth, for instance, I felt like really banged up, and I just gave myself kind of the space and the grace to just take time off. And then months go by and it's like, I haven't really run at all in months, you know? And, the little like weird little injuries that I was kind of dealing with, they didn't really go away, you know, but like, I wasn't doing anything to help that. Like I wasn't doing strength work or anything.
Yeah.
And then more months go by, haven't really run. And then it's like February or March, like I got to get going, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt behind all year.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're new, yeah, that's one thing. But you know, me, I think that was like a 6th or 8th marathon, you know?
Right.
And I'm fascinated by the idea of like periodization. If you're new or more experienced, like how would you maybe recommend between now and then to like break up the training blocks or periods?
Yeah. So that's a really good question. When I do train people and write a marathon plan, I tend to use a Lydiard based pyramid, which are broken up into periods, with the base period being the longest one, and then hills, and then speed, and these kinds of things. You could go about it a couple of different ways. You could do two pyramids, first one being a little bit shorter, and you wouldn't really even touch on, I personally, if you started, let's say you started in November, I would do maybe a 2-month pyramid where it might be base work and hills, and then shut it down. January begins, then start your actual Grandma's pyramid,
right?
Which would be base work, hills, speed, some integration, some taper, speed and taper. That's how I would, if I were personally running it and coaching myself or something, that's how I would do it. You could also just Here's one thing that I think is nice about not having a training plan sometimes is it frees you up.
Right.
And now I think is a good time to for a lot of people to not have a training plan.
Right.
And just kind of run how you want to run.
Yeah.
And just sort of be free that way, knowing that you still have to be consistent. You mm-hmm. know, you're going to have to get out the door on times when you don't want to, even though you don't have a training plan per se telling you that you have to.
Right.
I just think sometimes it's nice to have a mindset that's a little more open, where with a training plan, sometimes you're sort of, the plan is telling you what to do and you don't have the option often.
Right.
Sometimes it, depending on your mindset, to maybe kind of stray from that.
Right.
It can be harder to stray from it when you actually have a plan.
So, regimented.
Yeah. It can be too regimented. It's sort of similar to like, you know, when people graduate from college and like, finally I can read a book that I want to read, you know?
That's how
I kind of see these months right now is kind of like, you can kind of do the run that you want to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's extremely important to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. And like something that I'm trying to change this year, because like last year is like, okay, just like the pure rest, like didn't really fix some like issues that I was dealing with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at least for me, like kind of my period is, that I'm trying to integrate is just ways to get to the base of the pyramid, so to speak, you know, for my actual training block, like feeling really just like healthy, strong.
Yeah.
So
sometimes we think of it as training to do the training.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and another option too would be some strength work, you know, in these couple of months, going to the gym a little bit more often. You could continue to go to the gym once your actual training plan begins, like in January, but you might dial back the number of days or some of the specific exercises that you do.
Yeah.
You'd want to keep doing the gym work, but I would personally just cut it back from maybe like 4 days a week to two or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned frequency. Maybe in the remaining months, you know, we're looking what 9 months out from grandma's.
Mm-hmm.
What is that sweet spot, do you think, in like 9 to 6 months out?
Well, for the marathon. Okay, so everyone's a little different. And so I would say like right now, you could probably, if you're relatively new, 3 days a week. Just get 3 days a week going.
Right.
And get that rhythm locked in and hold that for maybe a month, and then 4 to 5 by the time, I don't know, middle of December rolls around or end of December, something like that.
Yeah.
But I think 3 will get you ready. That's the training to do the training. Now, once your actual pyramid begins or once your training plan begins, 3 is not going to cut it
for the marathon.
Yeah. You're going to need 5 probably on the minimum, maybe 4 here and there, but more like 5. A classic way to do it is go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't run Monday, you don't run Friday. That's a relatively simple kind of ground level kind of approach.
Base, like get the finish.
Yeah. 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 Totally. It. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And you can actually run pretty fast doing that same 5 days a week thing. It would just depend on your workouts and how long your overall mileage, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. Good advice. Yeah, it's that time of the year. Everyone signed up.
Yeah.
Record sellout.
Our training group, the numbers are, it's a record number of people in the training group, and we're not even done with people registering. So.
Right.
Yeah. So it's going to be a big year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So when does your training group, Tony Stensland Coaching, when does that start up for people?
So we start in January. And you can still join if you just go to the Grandma's Marathon website. Go to the marathon and you gotta search a little bit to find the training groups, but you can still sign up there. And you sign up for the training group, you get into the race.
Right.
It's one of the only ways to get into the race at this point. The training group, and I feel like there might be one other way, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but those are the two main ones right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, whether you're self-coached or within a training group or whatever, it's training to get to the training. I like that. Next segment here, thoughts on the run. Tony, what have you been?
Oh my gosh. I have two of them.
Okay.
And one came on a run and also driving around town, but definitely on a run. And one came during a run or during a race.
Mm-hmm.
First one is that came on the run and driving around town, Halloween decorations. I find them to be fascinating. Okay, so Yeah. So Halloween is so different than other holidays with regards to decorations outside your house.
Yeah.
Well, one, let's start with it here. When I was a kid, there were no Halloween decorations like they are now.
I suppose, yeah.
Like maybe you put a paper skeleton on your window and that was taped it to the window. And
the
that
pumpkins.
Was, and pumpkins. Yeah, like jack-o'-lanterns. And that was it, pretty much. Right. Maybe an occasional ghost or something. And now it's like these huge inflatables and the 15-foot tall skeleton, right? And what I find fascinating about Halloween and how it's so different, the house decorations than other holidays, is you get this crazy dichotomy between the two. The imagery. So you get one house and it's kind of like these cute little ghosts and pumpkins and little Harry Potter creatures and they're like, and the big eyes and it's kind of cartoony. Yeah. And then the next house over, it's like chainsaw wielding devil house.
Right, right.
With like blood and gore.
You're right.
And it's just so interesting to look at those two things as you're running by or driving by. Because I saw it today on my run, the differences. It's just hilarious.
You're right.
And I'm picturing these kids trick-or-treating, and to me it's a kid's holiday.
Right.
So I think the age limit should be about 12. But you have these cute little toddlers waddling around, have no idea what's going on. You know, they're going with mom and dad trick-or-treating, and they go for like a block and they're done. And they've got like five candies and they're thrilled.
Yeah.
And they're just adorable. And that's like the little...
The goblin, the Harry Potter.
Yeah, goblin. The cute little Harry Potter thing. Like that's kind of catered to them.
Right.
And then
right,
you got the high school kids that still go out and trick-or-treat and want to just... have a great time outside at night and like the super scary stuff and the gory bloody skeletons and dead bodies and stuff. You know, it's so bizarre. And I'm thinking, what are these little kids thinking when they go to like the chainsaw wielding house, you know?
Just crying.
Exactly. Crying. Just pure terror.
Pure terror.
With the other ones is like cute. Yeah. I don't know. I just find that really fascinating and hilarious.
I thought of this today. There, I saw a yard where there was like probably like 20 like life-size like scary movie characters, you know, like the Terrifier clown and like
Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, all these ones.
Yeah.
And then I thought like, wait. These people have like a room in their house.
Well, right.
Like where do you store a 15-foot tall skeleton?
I know. That's another thought that I always have. Like people, they've got like 45 inflatables and like, what are you? Okay, I guess. You think it was a storage unit that you rent? I don't know. Yeah, everybody can do their. So that's my one thing. And then my second one, this one is, okay, this is going to be a hot take, controversial. This is going to make some people, I think, a little upset.
Yeah.
However, it's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's not just my opinion. I've talked with other people about this and they kind of feel the same way. Mm. And I'm going to throw it out there publicly just as a, maybe somebody would say, okay, I see what he's saying. And here's what I'm saying. One thing that bugs me in the ultra marathon world is the giant crew entourages that people bring. To me, like two people max should be the crew. Maybe three.
Yeah.
But not like seven or eight people and like five dogs. And they've all, every person's got like a matching uniform that they've bought
shirts
specifically for the race, you know, and their little signs. Like, it's too much because there's a lot of people at these aid stations, and especially early in a race before things get spread out, and it gets hectic, and the runners are coming through, and they can't even see their people because there's all these people spectating and kind of in the way at times.
Right.
And the dogs are fighting each other from the separate crews, and it's just, it's a madhouse at some of these things.
Yeah.
I was at Wild Duluth wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
The early ones were a little crowded.
Right.
Superior gets chaotic because there's just not enough room.
It's crazy
for some of these things that go on.
Right.
And I just want to put out there, like, if you're crewing for people, you're doing the race and you're putting together, maybe consider dialing it back a little bit. Like, it just for the sake of everyone else involved. I know you want to cheer on your runner and you want to be supportive. I get it. You're not wrong in that.
I would just say
like, maybe just think about the entire impact that you're having on the race itself sometimes.
Yeah, the race itself. Yeah, and, you know, is it vital to have that many people for a crew? Like, okay, like,
right.
It's maybe helpful to have, like, two people, or maybe even three, especially for a long race through the night, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
At one time, you know, like Superior, for an example, you know, there's the Crosby aid station where it's a mile walk.
Yeah.
If you have like a cooler,
yeah,
that would be really helpful to have three people. Right.
Right. Right.
But, okay, what's your vibe on this? Do you think the runners like the entourage? Like, do you think this is like,
oh,
I want Auntie
question.
Jane there, and I want Uncle Tim there, and I want, you know, make sure they bring the dogs.
Yeah. In a 100-mile race, eventually, no. I think everybody gets grouchy, and I don't think they care, you know. And they're not even noticing it anyway, because they're sleep-deprived, and they've ran for 75 miles, and they're exhausted, and I don't think they even half pay attention to that.
Right.
Now in the 50K that we just had, like, yeah, I think they probably appreciate it to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, but also you're racing, and so you're kind of in and out of there.
You're right.
In the 50K, like, people didn't linger in the aid stations much at all.
They're not sitting down.
Yeah, they're not sitting down and hanging out for 10 minutes. Right. At least not what I saw. I'm sure
not
people
taking
did
off the
later
socks.
On. Yeah. Right. Switching out entire wardrobes, you know.
Yeah.
That's not happening as much. And so then you kind of wonder, like, oh, did grandma really need to be here? You know? Yeah, there's these, like,
grandmas.
There were grandmas there, and, you know, it's kind of those aid stations are pretty convenient to get to at Wild Duluth. They're not treks, where some of them, like at Superior, it's a trek. Like you mentioned Crosby and the old Temperance one up that little ski trail hill, that rocky thing.
Yeah.
And then it's like so crowded, it's hard to even, you know, yeah, that one's chaos.
And driving on these narrow back roads and stuff too, like that's an aspect.
Right. Another thing too, like all the cars, and you make sure all the cars are parked on one side, because then you can barely get another car down the road, you know? So yeah, the crew entourages, I think it's getting out of hand.
Or,
I don't know, from my grumpy old guy perspective. Yeah. So again, like, people will probably be a little mad at me. That's fine. That's fine if you don't feel the same way. But I know that I'm not the only one that has this.
Yet another hot take from the Duluth Rundown podcast.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. If you have an opinion on this matter, make sure you email us, because we want to know this discussion. How do you feel? Yeah. And like, I want to know from the people who have entourage. Like, yes, I had my entourage there, and you can't stop me. It's not in the rules. Blah blah blah. You know,
correct.
Like, well, you know, does that help the race? I'd be genuinely curious. Like, yeah, I had my whole extended family there, and I loved it. Every moment, you know.
Yeah.
My grandma had the best time. Like, those are the stories I'd be interested in.
And it is
hear,
fun. You know? I really enjoy crewing, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I've crewed Superior 100, you know, solo multiple times, and I think it's a great time.
It sure is.
But yeah, sometimes I just think it's a little over the top.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Right. Like, both things can be correct, you know.
Right. Exactly. Very good. Next segment, what I'm into. I really wanted to talk about just the high carb kind of science, or maybe the trend with the high carb fueling, especially for, you know, ultra distance, 3+ hour efforts and stuff. it's worked really good. I mean, I've talked about this podcast several times during this race season in 2025, trying more of a liquid nutrition strategy during the races. However, I didn't really put a lot of stock in, like, the number of grams of carbs per hour I was, like, looking to get. You know, I was kind of shooting from the hip. And then at Wild Duluth, at the 50K, my goal was 80. And I set this goal, and I stuck to it, 80 grams of carbs every single hour in a mix form. And it was fantastic. I swear, like, you just don't get tired or fatigued in the same way. It's really wild. And that kind of led me to looking on some YouTube videos for the actual science. And the science is, I would say, pretty dramatic. And I don't need to regurgitate it in a bad way. If you're interested, you can easily find an abundance of information on high carbohydrate strategies. This has gone, like, all over the board, from, like, low carb, high fat in ultra marathon, 100 mile stuff, to, like, it seems like the high carb is the preferred option. And hey, I like the science to dictate, but I guess my takeaway message is, if you're doing, like, 3+ hour races, and you aren't planning and trying to execute on a specific number of grams per hour of carbs, I think you're leaving time on the table.
Yeah, and it's definitely been the trend lately. I mean, I've been paying a little more attention to the gravel bike world, and they're doing big, even bigger than 80,
right.
But they're definitely doing that in pretty much all in drink form and liquid form.
Right.
I personally, even in my ultra running days, much preferred liquid form, high calorie drinks.
Yeah.
Perpetuum from Heed. I was a big fan of Perpetuum. Now I really like Tailwind. I like Morton.
Yeah.
The drink mix and their Morton gels as well. And I even went back to some Goo gels, just kind of classic gels, just to kind of shake it up a little bit.
Yeah.
With the gels, just to give you an idea, everyone, if you're not super familiar with the grams of sugar in a grams of carbs in a gels, roughly 40-ish, somewhere in there.
40, I thought it was 50. More like 20.
It kind of depends. Somewhere in
like
there.
Like a goo.
Yeah, like a goo. I'm looking right now on their website. Goo chocolate is, yeah, you're right, 20. I must have looked at it wrong. Oh, I just looked at it. Yeah, 21 to 23 grams. So you would need to do four, yeah, to hit 80.
Could
roughly.
You imagine
for every hour
doing four gels an hour?
Right. So that's probably too much in that case, but you can supplement that with drink, or actually you'd have drink and you might supplement with a gel on occasion or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's a great way to go. It seems to make a lot of sense. My one concern would be if you're someone who's racing a lot would be, I mean, how much sugar are you really taking in that? I mean, that's a lot. Is it healthy long-term, I guess? That's my only one concern. I don't think it would be unhealthy, but...
My concern is underfueling. You know, how long have we been underfueling?
Yeah.
And we're asking so much.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a couple YouTube videos that I was watching that really stuck out to me. Is like, where do you get the fuel from? Like you're exercising, where does that come from? Like, some's from fat, but like, where does that come from? It's just like stored in your tissues or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then carbs come from your muscles and your liver.
Yeah.
But if you're taking in the carbs, you can actually like use more carbs apparently from your body, no matter where they're coming from, if you're doing like more than 90 grams per hour, so like whatever this high carb, versus if you're not fueling at all, you can process more if you're taking in more versus just utilizing it from your muscles or something. I'm explaining this poorly, but like, it's fascinating. And like, yeah, maybe sugar's bad. Like, my dentist is probably not super pleased with me, but that's kind of my pushback. And we're not scientists. We're not,
right.
You know, nutritionists.
Right.
Although we've had maybe some on the podcast, you know, that's my pushback. It's like, yeah, sugar's probably not good, but like, what's the damage or the downside of underfueling when you're doing like a 5 hour
hard potentially
effort,
yeah, you know? Does that have some harm on some long lasting harm on your body? Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Probably. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I think it's a really fascinating subject. And anecdotally, like 80 grams per hour was the most that I've done that I like know of, especially for like five straight hours in a row.
Yeah.
And that would, I would say, is the best that like my legs felt.
Yeah. And you've had
4 hours in.
Big fall.
Yeah.
You know,
that too.
Superior 100.
Yeah.
Heck of the North.
Yep.
The 50K followed by the half later that day. I mean, that's a big,
yeah.
I don't know, 6 to 8 week span there.
North Shore Inline. Got that
North,
in the books,
North Shore Inline. So, and then you like performed extremely well at Wild Duluth. And so,
the more carbs, the better the race went. Like that's how it went all year for me.
What I really like about this, this idea with that I think is easy is the numbers, grams of carbs per hour.
Right.
Well, you can sit down, just do simple math and then plan it out, particularly with being able to carry, if you're in an event where you can kind of carry or have an aid station or a drop bag or whatever.
Right.
You can just have it all planned and just your only job then is to consume it.
Right.
There's no more thought. The thought is simple. You do it beforehand and then you just go do your event.
Yeah.
I really like that concept.
Yeah. It's so easy. Yeah. Versus like how many carbs are in a bag of chips, you know. Read the label, I guess, and add.
Right. While you're out there, that's going to be impossible. It's like trying to do math while running is the worst math ever.
Yeah.
I remember like years ago, Chris Gardner won the Superior 100 mile race, and he had a gel every hour. And I remember at the time thinking, that's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah.
You know, but now we're hearing, oh, it should have been four.
For an hour.
Well, but, obviously he had other things.
Yeah.
To drink, but I don't. I don't even know for sure. Maybe he did pure water. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah. I think the science is fascinating, and if you're doing 3+ hour races, like, do some research, and like, I think people should train up and plan for the grams per hour, because like, it's been a game changer for me. That's all I know.
I think sports nutrition, race nutrition, a million times more fascinating and complex than training plans or training theories.
Really?
Absolutely. I think
that's surprising to hear, because you're such a like a training plan nerd. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think there's only so many to some extent. There's just little subtle variations, and often it's one of those things where this approach works for a large swath of people. Where with nutrition, I feel like that swath gets much more narrow.
Oh yeah,
and really starts to get down to like individual specific, and then even what worked in the spring might not work in the fall at times too.
Right? Oh yeah,
that's where I think it gets just so tricky.
Right.
Personally.
Right. Yeah, a lot goes into that.
But it's interesting.
It's fascinating. That's what I've been into, looking at some of these YouTube videos and science and stuff. So, yeah. Last segment here that we got, shout outs. Tony, you got any shout outs?
I do. I have one quick shout out to our Duluth East, high school cross country teams, both the boys and the girls made it to state again, third year in a row that we've done that. Real senior dominated teams this year. So, both the boys and the girls, and really awesome to see those kids hit the goals that they had for themselves, and just continue to just run so well. They're just awesome kids, and so big shout out to them. And then all the other locals who made it as well. Mm-hmm. The Cloquet boys are like really good.
Oh,
Denfeld had a female runner make it to state.
Nice.
Hermantown has some really talented girls as well. So just really cool to see some of these local schools doing well.
Awesome. Awesome. Congrats to all the kids out there. I wanted to do a shout out as well to Erica Olin, local Duluth runner. Erica just set a fastest known time on the Duluth Traverse. Her notes say she was shooting for 6:40 and went under that by about 18 minutes. The new fastest known time one way for female on the Duluth Traverse is 6 hours, 22 minutes, 59 seconds from Erica Olin. So nice work out there. And then, I think that wraps up our podcast for this month.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Mike, for all your work. Yep. See you guys out there.